It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen, because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I am Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here. So it's 70 degrees and sunny today, and we are playing with the herbs that are coming up in our garden.
That's right. We have some early herbs like chives, I think sage. Was that lavender that you had out there?
Yep. No oregano or thyme came back this year, but still pretty good to get three herbs back in your garden before you even try any dirt. And this is your official public service announcement that you have about 1 month to play in your garden before it's time to put everything in.
Now, let's say I live in an apartment and I'm not able to plant a garden. Can I plant things in pots? And if so, what?
Of course you can plant a garden in pots. I don't think there's really anything that you can't plant on your apartment balcony.
What about carrots? Wouldn't they be really small and stubby in a pot?
Yeah, but those are the best tasting carrots when they're like 4 inches long and kind of ugly. Actually, I'm going to plant carrots in a pot this summer just to see how it turns out.
Fine. They'll probably like grow into an L shape.
That would be cute.
But I would say if you have limited growing space, I would probably plant basil. That's one of our favorite garden herbs for the summer. And then maybe a tomato plant, Alex.
Yep, I put a tomato plant like in one giant pot by itself.
And then probably another herb pot with maybe some oregano or thyme. I would say oregano and thyme are
rosemary.
Probably our most used herbs. Rosemary, we do use quite a bit.
And chives. I put chives on everything.
Yeah, chives. I think chives over rosemary.
And mint.
And mint over rosemary.
You're going to need several pots.
But if you've never grown herbs before, you will be amazed at how they transform your food. Even just putting a sprinkling of chives and maybe some oregano and thyme into your scrambled eggs in the morning is amazing.
And when it comes to the most important herbs like basil, I like a redundant plan where you put some in your garden bed, some in a pot out front, some in a pot out back, because you don't want to run out of basil when it comes down to pizza night.
Good point.
So the beginning of gardening season means it's the end of maple syrup harvesting season.
That's right. The change from cool weather to warm weather is what brings the sap all the way out of a tree.
Are you some sort of maple syrup farming specialist?
No, but I actually talked to an expert and I recorded it for this podcast.
About maple syrup?
Yes.
Well, all right. I love maple syrup.
So the funny thing is I wanted to do a podcast about maple syrup because we use it all the time today. But I was thinking about when I was growing up, we would have two bottles of syrup at the table. We would have one that was like a plastic woman, and then we would have another one that was a glass jar. And the glass one had the real maple syrup, and I thought that was just simply disgusting.
Your dad loved it. He has good taste.
He did. And I just wasn't used to it. I loved the high fructose corn syrup or whatever it was in that syrup. And I did not eat real maple syrup for the longest time.
But now
we use it all the time in our cooking. And I used to use honey for everything. And now I use both honey and maple syrup in different ways in our kitchen.
Is maple syrup pollinator friendly?
I believe that it is. You'll have to go back to our episode
about bees,
which is episode
21. Sweet as honey.
That's right. If you want to learn about what pollinator friendly is, check out that episode.
But you aren't kidding when you say that we use maple syrup all the time. I mean, I think the last time that we used white sugar in a recipe, I had to dig around in the cabinet. I didn't even know if we had any because it had been months. Even for our baked goods and all that, we use either honey or maple syrup most of the time.
Right. We love using natural sweeteners. And that's not to say that they are not sugar. And that's something we try to share in every episode where we talk about natural sweeteners. It's still sugar. It's still sweet. It's still not the best food for you, but it is a natural product. It's a whole food, and it's not the refined white sugar. Not that that is bad for using, but that's something that we decided to do in our kitchen, was just start using more natural sweeteners. And we love the taste of them. They have very nuanced taste over a simple white sugar.
So the process of getting maple syrup out of a tree and onto your pancakes is slightly more complicated than simply inserting a spigot. So you went and talked to an expert?
I did. I talked to Ben Holscher of Roxbury Mountain Maple. They are a family-owned business up in upstate New York.
Right in the heart of maple oil country.
Right.
Practically Canada.
Right. And I caught up with him about the entire process and what he likes to use maple syrup on. So here he is. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the A Couple of Cooks podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So you are right in the midst of harvesting a whole lot of maple syrup. Is that right?
Yes, we are. It is go time at Roxbury Mountain Maple. Once the sap starts running, the season's not over until the buds start coming out. So as long as the weather's above freezing, the sap is flowing and we're collecting and ROing and evaporating. So we've been very, very busy.
So tell me a little bit about how you get this maple syrup out of the tree. It's not just like stick in a spigot and it comes right out, right?
You're right. It's interesting how little people actually know about maple syrup. It's an industry that's been around for a long time, but it hasn't always been marketed that well. And so some people think the syrup comes straight out of the tree. Some people don't even know that it comes from a maple tree. Every tree has sap, and technically you could make some kind of syrup from many trees. For instance, with birch trees, you can make birch syrup, but it doesn't taste nearly as good, because the unique thing about the sugar maple trees is that, as the name implies, there's a high sugar content. And when you put a spout into a sugar maple tree, you'll get sap coming out in the spring, and that sap has about 2% sugar. So the process of turning that, what we call sap, into syrup is basically one of evaporation. We take that raw sap and then we boil it, and we boil away all the excess water, and we go from 2% sugar all the way up to about 67% sugar. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of water that we have to boil away. And generally the ratio is, it takes 40 gallons of sap to produce 1 gallon of maple syrup. So,
wow. 40 to 1.
40 to 1. And if your sugar content is low, for instance, last year we had a lower sugar content. It was taking about 50 or 60 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup.
So how many trees do you have in your property to create all this syrup? It sounds like it would be a lot of sugar maples.
You guessed right. Absolutely. Yeah. We only get about a third of a gallon to half of a gallon per tree. And we're trying to keep up with our growing market. And so we're constantly adding taps. This year, we're up to 23,000 taps. And a few of those trees, wow, have 2 taps. In them, but most of them are just single tap trees. So we probably have about 20,000 maple trees that we have tapped. And this summer, we're actually have plans to add another 10,000. So we'll be up to about 33,000 by next season. And from
that's
all
a
of
a lot of maples,
it is. It's a lot of hiking.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, we're in the woods a lot. And from all those trees, next season we'll expect to make about 15,000 finished gallons of maple syrup. So this year we're hoping for about 10, but we'll see.
I think learning about how things are made really gives you an appreciation for them in the grocery store. And I know sometimes some people have said to me that maple is a little cost prohibitive, but when you think about all the trees and all the work that goes into it, it definitely is valuable. And for that taste, I think it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about kind of appreciation grows when you know what's going on. And the amount of work that goes into producing maple syrup and the amount of investment that it takes in machinery and manpower, it's we're not actually making a huge profit margin. We would lower the price if we could, but it literally takes all of most of that is actually cost. We're not making a huge margin on that, and that's because it's a wildcrafted product. You know, it's not a controlled environment where we go out to our greenhouses and tend the maple trees and everything is automated. Even though technology has improved, we literally have to go through our 500 acre farm 5 or 6 times and visit every tree, repairing lines, putting the tap into the tree at the start of the season, taking the tap out of the tree at the end of the season, thinning invasive species, fixing things that may have broken or trees that may have fallen on lines. And so just on the production side of gathering the sap, there's an enormous amount that goes into producing it. And then when we actually get to the maple season, there are a lot of other costs involved as well. So altogether, it's not an inexpensive commodity, but I think it is worth it as well. And hopefully, as the industry continues to develop, it'll become even more efficient, and hopefully costs will go down in the future. But one thing I do like to point out with maple syrup, even though it does cost a little bit more, it has such a strength of sweetness that you can actually use less maple syrup than you would use, say, a white sugar or even a honey. My wife actually looked it up for me, and she said it takes about 3/4 the amount of syrup to get an equivalent sweetness as white sugar. So there is a little bit of a savings there.
Got it. Yeah. And actually, I've mentioned to you before that we've started using maple syrup in a lot of our desserts, and we find the flavor is so nuanced. I like it better than white sugar.
Yeah, I do too. Absolutely. My wife and I use it in everything. Obviously, we have copious amounts of maple syrup, and so it's easy.
I'm sure, yeah.
For us to do that.
So, this is your family's business. Did you grow up tapping maple trees, or when did the business come into your family?
Well, we lived on a farm, kind of a hobby farm, for a long time, and my dad and I own a different company, and we were kind of tired of traveling. So he went to a conference where he found out that the technology had improved to the point where making maple syrup was profitable and could actually function as a primary farm business. So he looked around at his property and knew that he had thousands of maple trees. Not all of the ones we tap now are ours. We've actually leased neighboring land, but it was certainly enough to get a start. So he started it up in 2010, and we've been growing steadily since then. And after college, after I graduated and got married, my wife and I joined the team 3 years ago. And so it's really, really a family business from start to finish. We have other team members as well, but we consider them part of the family in a sense as well. So it's a fantastic team here at Roxbury Mountain.
So let's get back to those recipes you were talking about with your copious amounts of maple syrup. What's your favorite way to use it, or a few of your favorite ways?
You know, the simplest ways are my favorite. I think my single favorite way to use it is in my coffee when I wake up in the morning.
Oh, I never even thought of that.
Oh, you should try it. If you're a coffee drinker, yeah. I'm kind of a coffee snob.
Oh, so, man. Yeah.
Yeah. After making my perfectly brewed cup of coffee, I like to put in some grade A dark or very dark maple syrup. And that brings the sweetness to the perfect level, in my opinion. And it also gives it this awesome little maple finish to the taste. So I'm a huge fan and advocate for maple in your coffee. So that's one of my favorite ways. And then another super simple way is to put it in a little Greek yogurt, because sometimes Greek yogurt can be a little bland on its own. But if you put a little maple syrup in there, for a very low calorie count, you get a really awesome, awesome taste. And it goes super well with fruit, too. So you can kind of make a special little yogurt dish for in the morning, and a great way to start your day. I think another one would be just simply putting it in vanilla ice cream. It's so good. Yeah.
Another one I haven't thought of.
Yeah, it's just I like the recipes that really allow maple to kind of speak for itself. But my wife is the cook in the family, so she loves to use it in more nuanced ways, where she'll just put it in a dish as a sweetener, and she knows which grades to use to if she doesn't want the maple flavor coming through, she'll use a lighter grade, and that will allow her to you know, make a dish that doesn't taste like maple syrup, which I think a lot of people wonder about. You know, if they want to make a dish and just use maple as a sweetener, how would they go about doing that? And probably as you've discovered, the lighter syrups are better for that, like a golden or an amber maple syrup work best for using as a strict sweetener.
And tell us again in your 2-sentence summary. So there's a grade A and a grade B. Which one corresponds to dark? Which one corresponds to light?
Great question. In the past year or so, our industry changed the grading standards, which actually caused a lot of confusion in the market, because for decades, syrup was broken down by grade A, light, amber, and dark, and then there was a grade B. And many people grew to love the grade B even more than the grade A syrup, and so they would ask for grade B. We would have people, you know, all the time stopping at our store or online asking, you know, do you have grade B? And we did for a while, but over the past year, they changed the grading standards, and legally we could no longer call grade B grade B. They actually changed grade B into two grades, but most of the grade B is now in what we call grade A dark. So when you go to the grocery store, if they do have all four grades, they would be grade A golden, grade A amber, grade A dark, and then grade A very dark. And okay, if you're looking for the famous grade B, your best shot at getting that is going to be in grade A dark, or grade A very dark. So it's the grading standard now is simpler than it used to be.
Got it. So basically grade A, and then the color will be after that, from light to very dark.
Yeah. And generally those grades correlate to a certain intensity of maple flavor. So very dark has an extremely strong
syrup.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yep. There's a much stronger maple flavor in the very dark, kind of like a caramel finish to it in grade A dark. And grade A amber has sort of like a balance. You still have the maple flavor, but there's more sweetness. And then golden generally will be a very sweet grade, not much of the maple flavor that people typically recognize. So that's why it's often used as a substitute for white sugar.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. I've learned so much more about maple syrup, and I'm going to go pour a little bit in my coffee.
Awesome. Let me know how you like it.
Will do. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Well, I'm glad that we had an industry expert when it comes to sorting out the maple syrup grading system.
Right.
It is confusing, but I do think it's a better system, because I remember back in the day looking at grade A and grade B in the grocery store and just assuming that grade A was better because A's are better than B's.
Well, they are now, because everything is A.
That's right. Just go by color. Do you like it light and Fruity or dark and mapley. It's right there on the bottle.
All right, let's get to some recipes. So I loved some of the ideas that Ben shared in the interview. Adding maple syrup to Greek yogurt is something that we do all the time. Usually we just do it to taste, so just add as much or as little as you want. And I like to put in a little bit of vanilla extract as well when I do that. So you don't need to buy flavored yogurt. You can flavor your own to taste.
Mm.
Probably our most popular maple syrup recipe is a recipe called Bliss Bites.
Bliss Bites. Oh,
can you edit that out, please?
Why?
So Bliss Bites. Just like what they sound like.
They're heavenly.
They're heavenly. We set about to create a no-bake cookie, and we use some cocoa powder, some peanut butter, oats, coconut oil, and maple syrup. So these guys are gluten-free, dairy-free, refined sugar-free, all the frees. But most importantly, they are delicious.
Not taste-free.
It's not taste-free. The bottom is the chocolatey, oaty layer. And then the top is a peanut butter drizzle, which we use, again, maple syrup with some peanut butter and coconut oil.
So you're thinking basically it's an all-natural Reese's peanut butter cup.
Exactly.
But a little bit more complex. A lot more complex.
Right. Using that maple syrup gives it a really interesting, nuanced flavor. And we've had so many people make these. We have people contact us on Instagram quite frequently showing us pictures of the Bliss Bites.
Bliss Bites.
All right, let's move to the next recipe.
Wait, how long do you have to bake the Bliss Bites? I wasn't paying attention.
They're no bake.
What does that mean?
Actually, you throw them in the refrigerator and they solidify and they're good.
Sounds delicious.
And we've had people approach us and tell us they put them in their freezer. And they disappear very quickly, actually, even no matter where you put them.
Like freezer mice or something.
I think so, yeah.
All right, so you got me a sweet recipe. How about a savory recipe?
So I picked our latest recipe over on our website, acouplecooks.com. We have a Get Your Greens non-pizza. This pizza, it is a non-pizza, I guess, because it doesn't have cheese, but you wouldn't even notice.
Whoa.
And we love making non-pizzas for a quick and easy dinner because we don't have to make our state-of-the-art pizza crust, which you can find in a past episode. You actually use non-bread, and in this recipe...
I'm still confused. You just keep saying non-pizza, non-bread. What are you talking about?
You use the Indian flatbread called naan.
Oh, naan.
N-A-A-N.
Got it.
And you spread that with hummus, and then we have a mixture of greens... So you can use chard or kale or spinach, whatever your favorite is, and then some broccoli and some artichoke hearts. And you put those on top and then use a drizzle, a tahini miso drizzle. And that's where the maple comes in.
Oh, I've been waiting.
So it is a very savory drizzle. The miso is something that's used a lot in Asian cooking, and we've used it here to bring a really savory element to the sauce that's almost a little bit like cheese. And then we added a little maple syrup in there to balance out the savory, salty, and sweet component to the dressing. And it is pretty out of this world. If you remember, you tried it and you loved it.
I did love it. And it's really filling for a vegetable-based pizza. There's no meat on there, but you're not going to leave unsatisfied. So maybe it is a pizza, not a non-pizza.
Right.
So how about you? Where do you use maple syrup aside from waffles and pancakes? Let us know on our blog, acouplecooks.com, or in the comments at Instagram or Facebook at acouplecooks.
That's our show for today. If you've enjoyed our show, we'd love it if you told a friend or family member about the show and how to listen.
We'd love it even more if you pulled out their iPhone and opened up the podcast app and plugged us in and hit subscribe. Because sometimes it's just hard to figure out where that podcast app is.
All right. We will talk to you next time.
Bye.